What's trending? The drug crisis.
There was a meeting yesterday with the Seattle City Council, actually happening as we were doing our show, and they were looking into the programs that the city is funding to tackle the drug crisis. And really, we're almost at the point where we should just call it a fentanyl crisis, because that's what's been going on. We've been seeing a lot of addicts, particularly homeless addicts, who are feeding their addiction by breaking into homes, stealing from retail stores, selling it, and then using the cash to purchase fentanyl. Fentanyl that costs $1, $2, $3 a pill. You could smoke fentanyl. You can inject it. For the most part, they're smoking it. They're pill forms, but they're, a lot of the times what we're seeing is they break it down into a powder and they take it that way. And ultimately, they end up dying on our streets. We've seen a massive and historic surge of fentanyl deaths, not just in Seattle, but across the region. But when you look at King County, we are, as of today, at 545 fentanyl fatal overdoses. 545. It's May 24th, so we're not even at the halfway part of the year, which means we're on trend to exceed last year's record high 1,000 fatal overdoses. And you would think that the city and the county would try to get people off of fentanyl, but we found out yesterday something that we've always known, right? This is not a surprise, but it is somewhat shocking to hear them finally admit it, that they don't really try to get people off of fentanyl because there's some people who just don't want to quit. And so instead of helping them, instead of convincing them as to why they should get to quote-unquote abstinence, which is the language that they use, which I think is intentional, because they see it as something that is just not possible, kind of like sex abstinence. That's why they're using that term. Instead of actually helping them get off the drug, convincing them why staying an addict is going to ultimately kill them, we're just giving them tools to continue their addiction. So you had four people yesterday presenting to the Seattle City Council, one of the committees. And let's just introduce them to you.
Great. Thank you, Chair Herbold. My name is Brad Feingold. I am a strategic advisor for Public Health, Seattle King County. I'm joined today by some of our amazing community members who work and run community-based organizations that were funded by this. I will let everybody introduce themselves.
Hi, good morning. My name is Amber Tejada. My pronouns are she, her. I work at the Hepatitis Education Project as the Director of Programs and Drug Checking Technician. Good morning. My name is Laura Workman. My pronouns are she or they.
I'm the Executive Director
of People's Harm Reduction Alliance.
Good morning, council members. My name is Michelle Conley. I use she, her pronouns, and I work for Evergreen Treatment Services, the REACH Division, as the Director of Integrated Care.
Great. So now we know exactly their pronouns. And obviously that means we're going to be able to really get to the heart of what it is that's happening. I love that they have to introduce their pronouns as if we can't tell. So they're out there working on the streets, connecting with people who are primarily connecting with people who are homeless, who are addicts. And there was a point in which Sarah Nelson, who's the only council member who seems to truly care about this issue and focus on getting people the help that they actually need, she had some very simple questions. And it gets to the heart of why harm reduction strategies do not work. Harm reduction strategies mean we are making it, quote unquote, safer to continue this addiction. We'll give you a needle. We'll give you a crack pipe. We'll give you the tools that are clean for you to use because it stops you from spreading, for example, with needles, blood-borne diseases. And they do this and they say, well, it's because if we don't, they're going to get sick. And while they're addicted and while we're working to get them off of their drug, at least we're keeping them alive by not giving them, you know, the ability to contract HIV from sharing needles. But what exactly is considered a success from a harm reduction standpoint? Sarah Nelson had some questions.
I hear a lot about medication for opioid use disorders, and I get it, but that does not help people that are on uniquely stimulants. You've heard me say this before. It provides treatment, and it reduces the overdose of people that are on one specific kind of drug. And so, you know, I guess I'm just talking about wanting to see more in the way of what is beyond the pre-contemplative treatment. I mean, because harm reduction, it seems like, and this is maybe in the popular conception of the term, sort of came to the fore during the AIDS epidemic when people were dying and transmitting HIV through needles. And so definitely needle exchanges were harm reduction. They were stopping the spread of disease and also death. But then it seems as though the concept has gotten wider. And so for one example, I know that when pipes are being distributed, I would like to know what is the harm that's being reduced by the distribution of supplies that simply help people to use drugs? And how do you measure the effectiveness of that public investment?
Yeah, sure.
Now, we'll give his answer in a second here, but those are two reasonable questions, right? Those are two reasonable questions. You're saying something reduces harm. Okay, tell us how it reduces harm that you're giving someone a pipe to smoke their drug of choice, and again, usually fentanyl, because you can't catch HIV, for example, using a pipe, right, under traditional usage. So what is the harm reduction there? And then what do you consider success? You guys are out there and you're trying to, quote unquote, tackle the drug overdose crisis. What is a success?
Two things. Number one is anecdotally, there's evidence that says if we can keep people from using needles, it stops the transmission of disease, right? So when people smoke drugs versus people injecting drugs, there's less harms caused to people. So if that is that's one piece of evidence and logic.
And by the way, people don't generally inject fentanyl. So it's a little bit of a disingenuous answer, at least as it relates to the main drug that we're talking about here.
That's a piece to it. The second is that with, let me go back real quick to this slide.
So it's pulling a slide that's going to tell us
nothing. With the increase in fentanyl use, one of the things that we know is that people are not injecting drugs like they used to. Most of the fentanyl that is coming in now is in the form of pills or in the form of powders that people can either smoke, ingest, snort. And they don't need a needle to use. And so what happens is if we cannot bring them in for services, then they're much more vulnerable to overdose, all the negative impacts. And so one of the pieces of evidence that's really clearly emerging is that by handing out smoking supplies for people, it brings them in for service.
Oh, does it?
It brings them in to get access to naloxone. It brings them in to get access to buprenorphine.
That's
it brings
service.
Them in for access to case manager.
Now, the case manager part, that is services, right? I mean, that's something that can certainly get someone on the right path. And so there's value there, I suppose, that if that's true and it is bringing people in, I would use that as an argument as to why you think harm reduction works. So she has, Sarah Nelson, a follow-up question.
So you would track the number of people that receive smoking supplies and go into treatment, and so that would be a measurement of success of that investment? Do you have those numbers?
There's been info briefs about the number of people who have been given smoking supplies and received access to naloxone. Or received access to case manager, or received access to other types of supplies.
Naloxone, I'm sorry, that's an anti-overdose.
Can you not interrupt?
Now, that's Lisa Herbold, of course. She is far to the left, very far to the left, and she doesn't want Sarah Nelson to get to some of the answers because she knows she's not going to get an answer.
Please.
Can you not interrupt?
I don't have information in front of me that talks about, and maybe
just so real quickly, he doesn't have information in front of him that I think most reasonable people on this issue would ask about. The whole idea, and he knows this, the whole idea is to get people treatment. And for that, you're going to have case managers, people who can help look out for these individual addicts, get their life together. How do you come to a meeting about that very issue without the data? It's because there's not compelling data. There isn't compelling data. And it is not true at all that there have been successes when giving people naloxone or pipes and clean needles, that it gets them off of the drugs. Quite the opposite. It keeps them on the drugs because it enables them. All they're doing here is enabling addiction. And they're doing it with taxpayer dollars. And he's very desperate to try to cover that up. And he, as you heard there towards the end, he starts to lean to his friends on the panel, the ones who are boots on the ground, getting the job done, to see whether or not they wanted to add something. And I have to imagine he was not expecting the person, what is her name, Amber Tejeda, she, her. He wasn't expecting her to admit what it is she ends up admitting.
I'll just say, I know it can be a little controversial, but one of the key tenets of harm reduction that I see is that we want to be able to facilitate and champion autonomy of people who use drugs.
So, facilitate and champion bodily autonomy of addiction, addicts, people who use drugs. She doesn't want to call them addicts. Champion the addict to continue to kill himself or herself under the guise that we're making it safe. It's never safe to consume fentanyl recreationally in this way. Sorry, they can pretend all they want. Well, Jason, doctors give it up. Yeah, it's measured. It's controlled. It's for a very specific purpose. It's monitored. You're checking in with your patient. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the illicit recreational use of fentanyl and other drugs. And she doesn't want to get them off. She wants a champion. She doesn't want to get them off the drugs. She wants to champion their drug use. Listen to this.
And so, there are folks who don't want to stop using drugs. There are folks for whom abstinence is not something by which they measure their success in life. So, like Brad said, people come in, they get safer smoking supplies. They don't have to inject if they're smoking. Our friends at People's Harm Reduction Alliance invented a whole new pipe so that people could smoke and not inject, which has proven to be a safer method of using drugs. So, abstinence is great if that's something that you...
If that's your jam,
have planned for you, but sometimes people are just going to use drugs and it's not going to lead to abstinence. And I think our mission, and I think what we've been able to do really successfully with this program, is to show that people can use drugs safely. We can help folks get access to resources if that's something that they're interested in. But ultimately, bodily autonomy is key.
Ultimately, bodily autonomy is key. That's all they're trying to do here. That's why you don't see successes in getting people off of the drugs. They'll say, and this is technically true, right? They'll say, we can offer resources to get them the help that they want. They just have to ask for it. Except when you are completely overcome by your addiction, you're living out on the streets, and that apparently is not hitting rock bottom enough. When you're at this point and you're struggling for your next hit, you're never going to come to the realization that, now is the time for me to get treatment, because there's no one in your life who is pushing you in that direction. And now you're being failed by the city and the county. And I think that when dealing with people who are sick, and if you're an addict, you're sick and you need help, I think there's a moral responsibility. But for these folks over there at this committee hearing yesterday, they don't think of it as a moral responsibility. They, in fact, think it's immoral, it appears, to get involved and try to get them to quit. It might cause stigma to be attached to their drug use. So we want to give them bodily autonomy. It is absolutely 100% positively disgusting and absurd. And they're not hiding it anymore. And I'm grateful that Amber Tejeda was being open and honest about where our tax dollars are going, because I think that too few people either working in this world announce it and explain it and detail it for the public, and too few people in the public understand exactly what our dollars are going to. Let us be crystal clear. They are enabling addiction, and for them to pretend that what they're doing has been quote-unquote successful is absolutely delusional. You do not call it out as successful when you see record-high fatal overdoses. That's not success, that's failure. Now, if you want to redefine success, which is what they're attempting to do, well, then anything can be a positive. Anything can be a success if you redefine what that term means. To them, success is bodily autonomy and allowing people to continue to use and giving them, quote unquote, safer drug paraphernalia. And ultimately, their end goal is to hand out, quote unquote, safer drugs, drugs that are tested for purity. That's their end goal. And they're using tax dollars to do it. And we're not supposed to ask these questions. Sarah Nelson was then scolded again by Lisa Herbold, the city councilwoman, for daring to ask questions. We're not supposed to question their approach. We're supposed to just give in to their approach, pretend that it's the right move, pretend that it's saving lives when it's literally killing people. They're killing people. These are people who are responsible for death. They can convince themselves otherwise. They can justify their actions as good, and maybe their intent is good. Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt. They truly believe what they're doing is going to help, but it's not. It doesn't change the reality. It doesn't change the fact that they are responsible in large part for helping people die. You can still overdose when given a pipe to smoke out of or a needle to shoot up with. And this is not going to stop. It's going to continue and continue and continue. And the crisis is going to worsen and worsen and worsen. We're already at an emergency. We're already at historic highs. And since this city has really leaned into harm reduction, we have seen the increase year after year after year. Since 2018, we've seen huge surges. 2018 was the year in which then-prosecutor in King County, Dan Satterberg, announced that he wasn't going to charge for personal possession of illicit substances. Since that decision was made, we have lost scores and scores and scores more people to drug overdoses. And no one seems to want to step back and say, okay, we failed. Maybe we should pivot. Maybe we should go down a different direction. Maybe we should reconsider the harm reduction strategy that doesn't include a significant push towards treatment. No one is saying that. They're doing the opposite. They're pretending that it's a success and they're tripling down and quadrupling down. And as they do that, more people die and we're paying for it. So now we end up becoming complicit in what's going on, even though we don't consent to our money being used in this way. It's disgusting. It's immoral. And it's being done out in the open, and no one is supposed to say a damn thing about it. So how many more people have to die before we change course? Here's the truth. There is no number. They will never change course. The only thing that we can do is put people in positions of power to stop them. They are being funded, so you got to cut the funding. And you're not going to do that when you have advocates for harm reduction strategies on the city council or on the county council or working for Seattle Public Health or Tacoma Pierce County Public Health or the Department of Health at the state. You're not going to change anything unless you stop the funding. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on this Freedom Series Wednesday. I hope to see a lot of you there tonight. It's sold out in Renton, the crime crisis. Just three quick notes. Some of you are maybe getting ready to head on over. Hopefully you'll be there by 6:30 when the doors open, because we're going to start at exactly 7:01 and 17 seconds. And I know it because I curated the playlist for the auditorium ahead of the event. So Point number one, I hope you pay attention to the perfectly curated and on-theme playlist. There are a lot of surprises in there. Number two, we have a special guest that we have not announced. This individual will be opening the event, another reason why you should be there on time. Perhaps, and I'm not saying for certain, but perhaps this is someone who will be announcing at some point that this person's running for governor. I'm speculating. You should speculate as well. I think we should start the rumor mill because this individual's name has been brought up. It's not the first time it's been brought up. So maybe they will be announcing a run for the governor. And then number three, as a thank you for everyone who's showing up, I am making a big announcement tonight. I will be only making it tonight, and then I'm going to hold off and bringing it to the show for a couple weeks. So I would ask if you're there tonight and you hear the special announcement, let's keep it on the DL. I'm doing this as a thank you, I appreciate all of you for giving me 2 hours of your time tonight. And hopefully you'll like the special announcement. It's not bad news, by the way, and it doesn't impact the show whatsoever. Just FYI, because anytime I say I have news, someone's like, oh, you're leaving. No, I'm not leaving. So I just hope everyone will keep it private tonight until I make the announcement on this show in a couple weeks. It has something to do with the big project that I've been hinting at for the last couple months now. Tonight, of course, the topic is the crime crisis, and it should come as no shock that we have new information coming from the Washington State Patrol, basically saying, yeah, you're not just imagining a rise in gun violence on our highways. It's happening. They've had 396 separate reported incidents of gunfire so far this year on our highways. The director of communications for the WSP, Chris Loftus, says that includes everything. We're talking about road rage, drive-by shootings, assaults, and gang-related situations. You see an increase from 459 shootings back in 2018 to 1,058 shootings in 2022. And they're looking specifically at what's causing this. It seems to be an increase in gang-related violence. We certainly, anecdotally, it feels like, and the reason why I say it's still anecdotal, because some of the issues of road rage have not just been happening on freeways. So I wonder if there is, in fact, a higher number of road rage incidents that lead to gunfire, because it feels like we've been talking more about those stories, those incidents, this year than we have been in the past. At the same time, a big problem here is that you've got 250 fewer troopers than they're supposed to have all across the state. And remember, this is across the state, so it's not just in Western Washington. They have a shortage of 250 troopers. And when you have that kind of shortage, it means less troopers out on the road serving as disincentives for anyone to potentially pull out a gun. You're obviously not going to pull out a gun in front of a Washington State trooper. So you have all of those issues happening at the exact same time, and they're all related. The staffing crisis is related to the crime crisis. That's the truth, not just on our highways, but also in our cities. In Tacoma, for example, they are dealing with a significant gun issue, a gun crime issue. And of course, it's not you and I who are law-abiding gun owners, the ones who get impacted by all of the anti-gun laws, that are responsible for the gun violence. We're seeing gun violence happen from gang members primarily, although not exclusively. There are just some bad elements. And there is now another shooting to report. It happened yesterday afternoon just as the show was ending. And it happened at Point Defiance Park. And now the police are searching for several suspects who ended up shooting and injuring a woman and then driving off. Wendy Haddow, spokesperson for Tacoma PD, spoke with Cairo News Radio, our sister station.
There had been an attempt robbery. A female was walking 5 mile drive by the Rose Garden, and a suspect attempted to rob her at gunpoint. A shot was fired. The victim, an adult female, received a grazing wound to the head.
To the head. Okay, when you get a grazing wound to the head, let's all just say that is 100% miraculous. That's luck. It's It's either a miracle or just pure luck. A grazing wound to the head. Now, if that bullet or her head were 1 inch in one direction or a half an inch, it wouldn't be a grazing. And she'd likely be dead. So this is happening to an alarming degree. And this is a woman who was just walking in the park. And again, this is at 5:30 in the afternoon. That's in broad daylight. This is an incredibly popular park. And so for someone to be ambushed, and we don't know obviously if it was a targeted theft or if it was just a vulnerable victim that a group of people took advantage of, I don't know. But we're seeing a lot of these stories over and over and over again. Armed robberies, smash and grabs, stolen vehicles. Again, you can point directly to policy. You can point directly to decisions that have been made, not even necessarily in Pierce County, but across the state, in which we are telegraphing to criminals, yeah, we're not going to really take this seriously. Don't worry, you're probably not going to do jail time. Because even if you have a prosecutor who's willing to go after you, and Mary Robnette, the prosecutor in Pierce County, is willing to actually, you know, use the law against people who break it, but they end up getting a judge who goes easy, and they know it. We've created a culture of lawlessness that people are taking advantage of. And it is not simply gun violence, of course. It's not even just the theft, unless you consider theft of children. Because out in Renton, the police are warning parents and their kids, if you live in the Renton Highlands area, you got to be on alert. There have been two child luring incidents that happened just within a week of each other. The first one happened on May 15th. And again, this is right in the middle of the day as school went out at McKnight Middle School. A kid was walking home. This girl said a man in a white Ford sedan started to follow her, said, hey, I'll give you a ride. Come get in the car. I'll give you a ride home. And thankfully, the girl kept walking, didn't go into the car. But then the driver kept following her, they say, pestering her. Hey, you sure? You sure you don't want to ride? You sure? You sure? And so the girl ended up going to a friend's house, began knocking on the door, trying to get some help because she knew something was off. And the suspect, according to the police, drove off at that point. Now, another incident happened on May 23rd. This one was early in the morning, but it also involved a child, a teen, who was walking to a bus stop, presumably on the way to school. And the girl's mom said what happened next was incredibly terrifying.
He gets all the way out and asks her again, do you know the entrance to the freeway? And she said, no. But he was aggressive.
He was aggressive, constantly pestering her. The mom, Tanya, spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
And I looked and I was like, who is this? And she said, Mom, that's him. That's him. And I said, oh, my God. And then I just called the police once we got up to the bus stop.
So imagine that. They end up encountering this guy again who maybe was around the area just luring kids as best as he could. Here's what the suspect looks like.
It was a silver car. He was an African-American. And he had on a ski mask or something camouflage around his face.
Jeez. Yeah, that's not suspicious in the middle of the day or early morning. Not suspicious at all. Why do you think all of these incidents are happening at once? Sure, crime has always occurred. Crime in Renton has always occurred. Crime in Tacoma has always occurred. But do you recall in recent memory, in our recent history, crime that's been occurring to this degree? Because I don't. And I think most of us who've lived here longer than just say 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, you got the sense, probably the way that I did, that things were starting to deteriorate. And it coincided with the rise in far left-wing policies, not left-wing policies, but far left-wing policies. There's a difference between Democrat policies and progressive policies, fringe policies, and more mainstream policies that maybe you and I would disagree with, but at least we can understand and they're not incredibly unreasonable. We just have an honest difference of opinion. But some of the policies that have been put in place, going easy on criminals, especially when they're juveniles, it's causing this. And yet again, you don't really hear any city leaders sounding the alarm. So we'll sound the alarms tonight. And we'll talk about what's going to work. So I hope to see you there. If you got your tickets, make sure you get there early. It's going to be a fun night, jam-packed. We start right at 7:01 in 16 seconds. So if you're late, you're going to cause disruptions. I would prefer you not do that and assume there's going to be a ton of traffic. Probably won't be a ton of traffic. It's been pretty good around that time in Renton, at least. But assume there's going to be a lot of traffic. So please, please, please leave early. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show on KTTH on this Wednesday afternoon. Do appreciate you tuning in. If you missed me this morning on Varney and Company, be sure to check out my Instagram feed where I just posted a video, instagram.com/JasonRants, or just fire up the app and search Jason Rants. This segment, I'm going to talk about poop and gas. I'm warning you now. There's a story out of Cairo 7 TV that said King County health officials are still trying to figure out what they can do to improve the protocols around the monitoring of bacteria in our swimming beaches and how to get that information to you, either via email or via your cell phone. Because we've been having a pretty consistent annual problem. And when we say an annual problem, it's not necessarily new for the month, but I think it gets a lot more attention because more and more people are spending time in our waters because it gets hot. So you go out to various beaches, various spots, and you dive in, and inevitably the water sometimes you swallow. Certainly it's, you know, touching your skin, and then you realize there's a lot of poop in it, like a lot. Poop. Poop from people. Poop from pets, poop from different critters, and it continues to contaminate the waters. And we've been traditionally seeing quite a few beach closures for several days. Now, part of the poop from the people is twofold. Number one, it is homelessness. Number two, it's just dirty people who are going into the pool, or excuse me, into the water, and they don't shower beforehand. And it's just, ugh, you get it. I don't need to get too many details. But unfortunately, those bacteria get to a point that becomes really harmful. And viruses become really harmful within the poop that could then get to you. The King County ecologist, Dr. Daniel Nidzgorski, he spoke with Cairo 7 TV. And he said to minimize a situation where we find ourselves having to close these beaches during the worst possible time when it's hot out, they say make sure little ones have proper swimming diapers to avoid accidents leaking into the water. That makes sense. Avoid swimming at the beach for 1 to 2 days following a rainy day because the rain can push some of the contaminants into the waters. And he says, do not feed ducks or geese because they poop a lot and you don't want them pooping a ton in the waters, especially when you're feeding them nearby. There's, you know, I did a story about this maybe 2 years ago, but the geese here are just out of control and something needs to be done because they're just pooping up a storm. And there's a park in Seattle that I used to live near, Lake Union Park. And I would walk by almost every single day as I'm coming to and from work. And at one point, you could not step on any clear pavement or grass without getting either on or dangerously close to goose or geese poop. It was that bad. Now, the issue that we usually find at certain beaches are Juanita Beach, Matthews Beach, that's in Seattle, Newcastle Beach in Newcastle, and Jean Coolin Beach over in Renton. So just be aware. I don't know how they're going to alert people to the issue, certainly if there's any closures, we'll be talking about it on the show. Just stop pooping in the water. Meanwhile, the Seattle Times has an interesting story, which I very rarely say, and it's not so much the writing is interesting, but the actual issue I find interesting. We've been hearing over and over and over again from Democrats and the Inslee administration that their gas tax, or really it's the carbon fee, is not creating any rise in gas prices. at least not making it prohibitively expensive. We've been hearing that over and over and over again. But the carbon cap system has, in fact, created a huge surge in gas prices across Washington state. That's the reality. And now you've got tribes that are complaining. And what's curious to me is that we are well above the national average, and there's no national concern that people are talking about right now versus what they were talking about with the rise of the Russian war, with the fact that just the inflation was pushing it too high, and then on top of that, you had less gas being put into the market, which of course would drive up the price. That's not the issue here. The national average is at $3.56. As of today in Washington state, the average is $4.62. That is really, really significant. And we are amongst the highest. Now, the whole West Coast is high, but usually the big leader is California. We're at 462. They're at 481. So we're not even that far off. But every state on the East Coast is trending higher than the national average. Idaho doing the best at $3.08. $3.80 versus the $3.56 national average. But every single state is doing poorly. We're unfortunately beating Oregon. This is not one that you want to beat anyone in. We're the second highest. We're the second highest as far as gas prices. And now you've got leaders from different tribes in Washington state saying, we want a meeting with the governor. We want to raise our concerns. We want to ask our questions because this carbon cap system that you put in place on gas prices is hurting us. And by the way, we've got tribal sovereignty issues. Like, should you have that kind of impact on our gasoline and how we're selling it? Seattle Times says, some say, and they're speaking of the leaders of these tribes, some say they're taken aback by how much the system seems to be driving up gas prices, despite Inslee's assurances that increases would be marginal. Anyone who believed Jay Inslee when he said that either doesn't understand the issue or doesn't understand how often Inslee lies. Like, you have to be incredibly gullible and naive to think that what Inslee said was true. And we were talking about it at the time that this whole issue was being discussed. We very clearly knew gas prices were going to go up. The Times writes, Henry Cagey, a longtime council member from Lummi Nation, who's been working on the issue, said at least 12 tribes want to take part in the meeting about the Clean Fuel Standard and Climate Commitment Act, which were adopted in 2021 and took effect at the start of the year. They're going to continue to raise a lot of concerns. And when the tribes start to push back, generally, although not always, but generally you see Democrats starting to give in. This is a quote-unquote marginalized community. They are in the BIPOC community. They're the second initial. And so after Black people, the state of Washington and their Democrats will give extra concern to anything that's being said from quote-unquote indigenous people. So when they start complaining, you can guarantee that Democrats will be paying attention, particularly since we're going into an election year. And they're going to be pandering for votes, and they want to make sure they're seen as the wokest, the most quote-unquote inclusive. I just don't know what can be done without a change of the law. Even if there was going to be some sort of compromise where they wouldn't extend the cap on prices to, you know, the tribes. How they would do that, I have no idea. But let's just live in a world in which that was possible. You still need the legislature to do something. And the legislature is done for the year. So you're probably going to see this kind of suffering at the tribal level for the next 6+ months, and then add another month or two on top of that to try to figure out if something's going to be done, what that might look like. And is it fair that they would get any kind of help when everybody else continues to suffer? It's a bad plan. The whole idea was to get you out of your car. They're making it expensive for that purpose. And now, unfortunately, whether you're living in Spokane or Chehalis, Bellingham or Seattle, you're spending on average $4.62. And of course, in certain parts of the area, like a Seattle, the prices are going to go even higher. It's absolutely insane. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.